To open up the Senate Environment and Natural Resources Committee for Thursday, May 7th. Colleagues, we have three bills up today. We have public hearings only. First, we are going to hear House Bill 2424, then House Bill 2230, and then last, House Bill 2227. I'm going to open up a public hearing on House Bill 2424A, and we have Representative Wisnett with us here today, and also Brenda Pace, is that correct? And thank you for coming here, and
Thank you, Senator. Madam Chair, for the record, Gene Wisnett, State Representative, House District 53. And Madam Chair, we're honored to bring this bill to you today. I didn't bring the record. I think it went through the House unanimously and through committee. This bill is an idea. It's not my idea. It was Mrs. Pace. She contacted me about a year ago and said, Representative, because I work for her. She's a constituent. And I understand we don't agree on all political things, but we agree that noxious weeds is a problem. And she came to me and approached me about a bill to add noxious weed removal to the Adopt-a-Highway program. So we had several meetings in Bend to get our idea and how we're going to go about this. And we came up with a draft bill. And with the leadership of Representative Klim, who is my co-sponsor on this bill, we convinced ODOT it was a good thing, and a good thing for the environment. We all know how dangerous and how economic impact of noxious weeds are. And our bill will not solve that problem, but we think it's a good volunteerism effort to start people aware, to become aware of noxious weeds. Our bill is simple. It just says if you can volunteer to pull weeds, and we're going to train you what to pull and how to pull them if you agree to do that on the Adopt-a-Highway program. So it's a real honor to bring this bill and to work with Brenda on this, and I'll let her speak and answer any questions the
Great.
Committee has.
Thank you. And can you make sure and identify yourself for
yes.
the record, please?
Yes, I'm Brenda Pace, and I live in Bend, Oregon.
Thanks for coming all the way here
you.
Today.
Thank you. I would like to see the Adopt-a-Highway program expanded to include weeds. And I'd like to talk a little bit about how it affects us on the home front. I'm a longtime weed puller when I realized spotted knapweed was along the Deschutes River. And the Deschutes River is a long way from any major road. You know, there's at least a mile there. And I was amazed that it was all along the river. So I'd been pulling for about 7 years along a two-mile stretch. And then I realized it was right in our neighborhood. There's a golf course there, and there were weeds all over the neighborhood. So it took us a couple of years to organize a group to spray weeds in the neighborhood. And then we realized that it was all coming from the road. From Century Drive, which goes from Bend to Mount Bachelor. And I called ODOT about that, and they said, well, you can get a permit and pull them, but you know we already spray that area. And I said, really? And so I called the guy who sprays it, who's a great guy and works really, really hard. And he said his time and chemical and machine would only allow him to spray what he could see from the pavement. So, I mean, in some places that right-of-way, that state right-of-way on Century Drive is 30 to 50 feet wide, and so he wasn't seeing what we were seeing. So we went back in and asked ODOT, well, can we do this under the Adopt-a-Highway program? And they said no, because the legislation does not specify that. It only specifies litter. So they said, you can get a permit. And I got a group of volunteers, and they agreed that we would get a permit so that we were permitted to go out there and pull weeds on the right-of-way. And, you know, and we did that. And so that's how we knew we were a help, because we did that about 3 weeks after the last spraying had occurred in that same section. And the first time we went out, we got 17 bags of live plants, not the ones he'd sprayed. And then we went out another 2 weeks later and got another 13 bags in 1 mile of highway. So we know we can be a help, and we want people to be able to volunteer for that, take responsibility for a section of highway, and be rewarded with it with the sign. And ODOT has everything they need to do it. They've got an application program, a safety program, volunteer coordinators, signs, insurance, all of the equipment and administrative mechanisms. The only thing extra for ODOT, for weed pullers, is that they need a weed plan. They need to know what to pull, when to pull, how, what, say, you know, the gloves and safety equipment that they need or tools that they need. And, you know, ODOT knows all the weed people in every county. And my suggestion is that the volunteer group get a weed plan signed off by that weed expert and take it with their application to ODOT. And that way, ODOT doesn't have any additional expenses other than what's incurred by having additional volunteers. So we're really hoping you can see this bill through. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Any questions for the representative or for volunteer? Yes.
Yeah. Madam Chair, I just want to put on the record that when you look on page 1 at the bottom on lines 21 on, that the people who are wanting to be part of the Adopt-a-Highway program will have the opportunity to choose what they can traditionally do, picking litter, mm-hmm. and if they want to take on the extra task of removing weeds, they can do that, but they're not obligated to do that.
Right. That's right.
Okay.
And the reason is, Senator, is that the timing is very different. Mm-hmm. You know, the litter is usually, in our part of the country anyway, is usually during the summer, early, you know, late spring, summer, and fall. But when you have weeds, and spotted knapweed is growing in July and August and early September, you have to go out 4 times right then. So you would end up having to go out at least 7 or 8 times to do both litter, and not everybody's willing to do that on a long-term commitment. And we'd like these to be long-term commitments.
One other follow-up.
Follow-up.
The signs that they will be putting up there if they adopt the highway, will they be different for those who want to do just the one or the other or both, or is it going to be the same signs?
I anticipated that they'd be different, but that would have to be in the OAR, I guess, someplace.
I think we have somebody from ODOT coming up, so they might be able to address that.
I'm hoping that they're different so that people get it's advertised as something that...
And, Madam Chair, we realized that when we put the bill together, we would work with ODOT when we draft, you know, do the rules and make it more specific in there how we can do that.
Okay.
And, I know that 3 members of this committee that... bicycles can also spread noxious weeds, so mm-hmm. it's going to help.
We'd never have a noxious weed on our bicycles.
We wash it every time we ride,
never.
Right?
Just like I always wash my kayak after I am out using it. I did notice that there was, as far as using a method other than pesticides, because I would be
That's
concerned,
right.
obviously, I've done quite a bit of eradication for Japanese knotweed, and the only way you can really eradicate Japanese knotweed is direct injection with
right.
an herbicide into the stock. So I would not necessarily want to have volunteers doing that. So there are certain things that obviously we don't want to have them doing.
That's right.
Yeah. And Madam Chair and committee members...
Without a permit, right.
Without a permit, especially.
We put in here agriculture because agriculture will be working with ODOT and the county weed control people to come up with a plan and education for the volunteers.
Any questions from this side? All right. Thank you very much.
Thanks
for bringing this forward. You can see you have a couple of members here that are co-sponsors on this bill, senators.
There are noxious things.
Yes. And next, we're going to hear from ODOT, Amy Joyce and Terry Witt. Is Terry here?
I didn't know Terry was ODOT. What's Terry got to do with ODOT?
I didn't know Terry was ODOT.
Terry's with OFS.
Oh, what she said with ODOT.
Amy. I don't know, Terry, did you change jobs since?
No.
Not on the government payroll.
Chair Dingfelder, members of the committee, Amy Joyce, Department of Transportation, handing out a little testimony here. Just to hit the high points, the department administers the Adopt-a-Highway program, which currently is litter pickup. Folks can, in addition to do that, adopt for landscaping, but they have to pick up litter as well. And the program's been very successful in attracting folks to picking up litter along our highways and beautifying our highways at little cost to the department and therefore the taxpayers. So the bill proposes to add noxious weed removal, as you could do it either or both, either litter pickup or noxious weed removal or both. To implement the bill, the department would modify an existing sign design The amendment on the House side would allow two groups, one for litter, one for noxious weed removal, to adopt the same stretch of highway. So we'd modify the sign design for that. We would have to amend our administrative rules, and the bill specifically states that the Department of Agriculture will be adopting rules as well to specify the particular things that go along with noxious weed removal. It's a little more involved in terms of training or specifications than litter pickup, which is pretty straightforward, and there's very little training that goes along with that. But that's what the department would do in conjunction with our colleagues at Department of Agriculture. So if you have any questions.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Terry Witt, Executive Director of Oregonians for Food and Shelter. About a year ago, I'm also a member of the Marion County Weed Advisory Board. About a year ago, Brenda came before our board to talk about a concept that she had developed, which is expanding the Adopt-a-Highway program to include the pulling of or dealing with noxious weeds. We thought it was a great idea, and we encouraged her to move forward and talk with her, one of her legislators, to get a bill drafted. And the bill we see before here is because of her tenaciousness. We wholeheartedly support this, and in fact, the section in there that talks about using methods other than pesticides was at our request, because the last thing we want are untrained public to be thinking that they're public applicators licensed to use pesticides. One of the things that we did note, and I think it's a very worthwhile program, if we do have some of those species of weeds that can only be controlled by chemical or something like scotch broom that has to use a wrench in order to get it out of the ground rather than hand pulling, we would encourage them to just mark those spots with some sort of fluorescent flag or something of that nature, notify the Public Works Department of that particular region, and then they could come out and, if necessary, treat those particular problem noxious weeds with the appropriate method, thereby not endangering either the public or the private citizens that are doing the Adopt-a-Highway portion of the program. But we think it's a great idea. It's a growing problem, and we have fewer and fewer resources being put to the problem at the local level, and this is one way we can get volunteers out there to help us start to cut down the problem, number one. But I think, as Brenda noted, one of the major things is the education component of this, to help people understand what is a noxious weed and why it's a problem. And I think that will go a long way towards helping us solve the problem on a larger scale. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you both. Are there any questions for either of the witnesses?
Quick question.
Senator Boquist.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just find it strange that, I mean, it's a great program. We should be doing this. But one of the department, the lady that testified earlier said that, you know, when they found the weeds along Century Drive, the portion that's outside of Bend, that ODOT said you can come get a permit to come pull weeds on our property that we're supposed to already be pulling. I just find that a little odd. Could you care to comment that, I mean, maybe we could have taken some initiative and not had to go to this level to say, okay, yeah, we should get more volunteers involved?
Chair Dingfelder and Senator Boquist, we have limited resources. We can spray for weeds. We can do what we can. These folks wanted to volunteer. We have to write permits for folks to go on our right-of-way to do anything. So if the question has to do with why we had to write them a permit, that's what we have to do. There are safety concerns always when folks are on our right-of-way. So we wrote them a permit, pretty simple process for them to go and do that, to volunteer, and appreciated their involvement. The statute limits, currently as it's written, limits the Adopt-a-Highway program. We weren't allowed to go outside of the statute. I'm not sure if that answers your question.
It's a good attempt. Thank you.
Thank you.
I know it's not your case, but
it's just the messenger, remember that.
I understand. It's just the public perception is they're like, okay, it sets a bad public perception. I understand all the legalities and safety stuff, but it's just a tough one.
Fair enough.
Well, the cycling caucus will make sure that when we're out on our bikes and we see some noxious weeds, we'll make sure and flag them. Okay. There certainly are plenty of them.
I don't know if we can stop on the right-of-way anymore.
Yeah, I know. We will. We see quite a bit when you're on your
bike. Dingo, you may not be pedaling too often if you're going to flag everything you see.
Yeah.
We'll see it. Thank you very much for your testimony. Anybody else who would like to testify on House Bill 2424 before we close the public hearing? Okay, seeing none, close the public hearing on House Bill 2424. We'll open up a public hearing on House Bill 2230.
Yes. Members of the committee, House Bill 2230 excludes from the definition of land use decision both state agency permits and compatibility statements issued by local governments that are based on or consistent with prior local approval of the same of the sustainability of the same use.
Okay, we have the Department of Land Conservation and Development, and also up next is the Association of Counties. I can't read. Derek Tokas? Derek? Yeah, why don't you come up? We have three chairs. Okay, thank you. And Director Whitman, do you want to kick off, or Bob?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Richard Whitman, Director of the Department of Land Conservation and Development. I am going to let Mr. Rindy take the lead on this particular bill for the department.
Okay. Thank you. For the record, Bob Rindy with the department. And I'm here to testify concerning 2230, which is our agency's bill, and which is quite technical, but actually concerns a very important aspect of our statewide land use program, which involves coordination of state agency and local land use decisions. We've got essentially two parallel universes between state government and local government. Back when the Founding Fathers established the land use program with Senate Bill 100, they put in place a requirement that state agencies must make decisions compatible with local land use plans. And they were thinking ahead to require that agencies not act in a manner that is inconsistent with local planning. So over the years, as the land use program evolved, there were a series of court decisions about this, especially involving disputes between agencies and local governments, where there was some feeling that agency decisions were not compatible with land use plan. And that led to some additional requirements in the 1980s. Central part of these requirements is something that's come to become a land use compatibility statement, or a LUCS, L-U-C-S. Everybody doesn't call it that, but that's what we're going to be talking about today. LUCSes are a major tool that local governments use to assure that a state agency permit is consistent with a local land use plan. So how does that work, and why do we need this bill? Obviously, if a local government makes a decision, a land use decision first, that is, that it determines that a proposed permit, whether it's from a local landowner or a state agency or whoever, if they determine it's consistent with a local plan, the state agency can follow that and rely on the local decision. We also have situations where state agencies act before a local decision is made, such as an applicant or an agent goes to the agency first and asks for a permit before approaching the local government. So there have been problems that have arisen in those different situations. And generally, you might have a local government approve a land use decision that also requires agency review. So you've got a local decision approving, saying, yes, this is consistent with our plan. Go to the applicant goes to the agency. The agency sends the local government a LUCS form, land use compatibility statement, and says to the local government, if we approve this permit, and is it consistent with your plan? The local government then makes a decision, yes, of course it's consistent, we already approved it. Unfortunately, with case law that's happened recently, that's now also an appealable land use decision. So you get a second bite at the apple, and basically what we're proposing to you today is, I think, a good government streamlining measure so that in certain circumstances, there is only one appeal opportunity for those kinds of decisions. So Section 2, that's the first real operative section. And by the way, what I've handed to you is a hand-engrossed version because we want to make a couple of minor amendments. But if you turn to Section 2, you'll see that a local decision, if it's already been issued, then a LUCS decision that the agency later asks for is not a land use decision. A local decision to sign a permit or a form that says our previous decision is consistent with the plan, that's not appealable again. We don't allow that second bite of the apple. So this is something that we think will cut down on what are really unnecessary appeals and streamline things. Section 3, as the other operative section of this bill, it has a couple of housekeeping provisions in it, but also some operative provisions. One of these would authorize LCDC by rule to require, and you'll see in our hand-engrossed version, rather than what we originally had, what it's going to do is allow LCDC to require a particular sequence. In most cases, generally, we think it's better if the local land, the local government acts first on a permit, even though it's going to later require an agency permit as well, but not always. So this language, as we've amended it or proposed to amend it, if you agree, would give LCDC some rulemaking authority. We'll look at these. There's a variety of decisions, a large variety of decisions that agencies have to give permits for, and not in all cases is it the best that local government act first. So we'll sort that out in rulemaking, but we did want to have your blessing to do that. And finally, the second part of that section, we think it's time that we do maintenance, I guess is a way to put it, make amendments to our LCDC rules by which we, back in the 1990s, approved state agency coordination programs for all state agencies that conduct activities that have land use as a component. We haven't looked at most of those for 20 years. With your blessing, we will revamp those rules, and then as resources are available, and that's important, we will begin the process of trying to update those programs. So I'll stop there. We did work with some local planners on these provisions. I know that they're here today, and they may have some additional amendments. We didn't try to fix everything, so you'll hear some other things perhaps from them. But we would urge you to pass this. We think it's while it's technical and complicated, it's going to streamline the process.
Okay, thank you. Any questions for the department? Senator Boquist?
Two questions. This is my first question is, when I first glanced at this, I thought this was had a major 49 impact, if you could answer that one. And then the second question, obviously I got 23 no votes in the other chamber, so there must have been a lot of opposition. Why?
So, Senator Chair Dingfelder, Senator Boquist, again for the record, Richard Whitman, Director of the Department, I'll respond to those questions. As to your second question first, I don't know for sure. My sense coming out of the House is that the reason for those no votes had to do with a desire on the part of some of your fellow legislators on the House side to see some work done on Measure 49 adjustments legislatively as a priority in the legislative process rather than having anything to do with the substance of this bill. That's my general understanding of what was going on there. I think, as Mr. Rindy has said, this truly is a good government streamlining, pro-development, pro-local government, cut cost of doing business bill. And so I think we have worked very carefully with the counties on this bill to make sure that it works for them also. And as to your first question in terms of Measure 49 impacts, there's nothing substantive in this bill that addresses in any way any sort of regulatory restriction on residential use of real property. So there's absolutely no Measure 49 issue here.
Well, Commissioner Manager, I appreciate that because, I didn't find it, but when you look at the staff measure summary and you look at some of the verbiage in the front of this, it starts out with land use, and it looks like it's an effort to, get around Measure 49, but I haven't seen anything in this.
No.
Senator Prasansky.
Yeah, just clarification, Richard, your statement regarding the vote count on this, if I remember correctly from other discussions with House members, the vote count was because House Bill 2230 came out first prior to the work they subsequently did on what would be their Measure 49 equivalent to our SB 945.
So, Chair Dingfelder, Senator Prasansky, that's correct. And so there are now two pieces of proposed legislation with adjustments to ballot Measure 49, including the bill that came out of your committee, Senate Judiciary, Senate Bill 945. And then on the House side, the House Land Use Committee has passed out of that committee House Bill 3225. And they're almost entirely parallel provisions in terms of adjustments to 49. And if I could, I'd also point out that those two bills are on the record supported by both Oregonians in Action and Thousand Friends of Oregon.
Okay. Any other questions? Senator Atkinson?
Section 3 was the addition of the rulemaking. Was there another section that worked, Bob, that had rulemaking authority in it?
I don't believe so.
Just Section 3.
Madam Chair, Senator Atkinson, there's actually two sets of rules that LCDC has, Division 30 and 31. Division 30 is almost entirely about state agency coordination programs that were approved by LCDC. As I said, I think the last one was in 1990, except for one that was recently done by DSL. Then we have a second set of rules on permits, Division 31, and that's the rules we're talking about primarily here.
Is this bill at all a response to the Big Look Task Force?
Chair Dingfelder, Senator Atkinson, the Big Look Task Force was aware of and supportive of this concept. They did not make it a part of their legislative recommendation to the Oregon legislature. There are provisions in the Big Look Task Force report that support this type of streamlining of regulatory processes between the state and local government.
One last question. To date, do you know how much money has been spent on the Big Look Task Force?
Chair Dingfelder, Senator Atkinson, I can give you a rough number. We'll have to get back to you with an exact number. So roughly, my memory is that in the supplemental session in February of 2008, there was approval of approximately $600,000 for the completion of the work of the Big Look Task Force.
If you could get me a total, I'd appreciate it.
Be happy to.
Okay. Any other questions? Thank you for your patience. Just state your name for the record, please, and I couldn't, and your organization, because I didn't know what those that acronym stood for.
I'd be happy to. Chair Dingfelder, members of the committee, Derek Tokos, I'm actually Multnomah County's principal land use planner, but I'm here today not on behalf of Multnomah County, but on behalf of the Association of Oregon County Planning Directors. And I passed out two items. One is a letter from our president, Austin McGuigan, in support of this legislation. And the other is some revisions that we would like to see to the bill. On balance, we applaud DLCD for bringing this legislation forward, and we wholeheartedly support the objectives of this bill. There are the two parts, as has been discussed. You have the land use compatibility statement, and then you have the coordinating state agency programs to try to streamline that a little bit. With respect to the land use compatibility statements, you know, these are a part of our day-to-day traffic at the counties, and the objective here, has always been that these be somewhat ministerial. This process is complicated for landowners who need to go through it, particularly when they need to obtain permits from both a local jurisdiction and the state. And what we've experienced over time is that these land use compatibility statements, while we try to handle them ministerially over the counter or relatively quickly, these are getting appealed, and in some cases they're being appealed, in our view, for reasons that are inappropriate. We very much respect citizens' rights to participate in land use processes and support that, and we do not want to take away anybody's right to appeal or participate in a land use process. But we would offer the amendments to this bill, which I'll go through shortly here. First, this is under sub H of the bill under section 2. Essentially, it would not consider a land use decision, a county action on a LUC statement, where the county has or city for that matter has already made a land use decision. That's part of what DLCD is currently offering, or when it's allowed outright under our regulations. Simply check the box, it's allowed outright. That couldn't be appealed by itself. Or if we check the box, it says, you know, this is going to require future action from the county. That in itself cannot be appealed. Now, there's another piece to this. It's under HII there, where we're saying when we check that an activity is not regulated by a local government. Now, we understand that DLCD has some concerns with that, and if that is a bridge too far, we're okay with removing that part of the language so that it would effectively say use of activity that would be authorized by the proposed state agency action is allowed without review in the local code. We'd be fine with that language alone.
Okay. So I'm assuming you guys haven't seen this language yet?
Madam Chair, we have seen the language. I think we're in agreement with the county planning directors with that one change in what they've proposed. I think we're fine with what they're asking for in terms of amendments to the bill.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Those are the proposed changes in a nutshell. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Okay. Thank you. Any questions? All right. So I will ask that the three of you get together with my committee staff and we'll work on, make sure and work on that amendment. And then also we have a letter. Did you want to say something about
yeah,
that?
Yeah, there's a letter. Also, there's written testimony submitted from some of your friends.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much, gentlemen. Anybody else who would like to testify on House Bill 2230? Going. Okay. With that, we will close the public hearing on House Bill 2230. And Director Whitman, don't go too far, because I'm going to open up a public hearing on House Bill 2227 and ask you to come right back up. Not getting off that easy. And then we have Representative Wisnant and also and Representative Nolan. He'll come right. Do you want to represent? You can do the introduction, and then we'll have the representatives come up. You what?
PowerPoint.
Oh, you have a PowerPoint. Okay. So why don't we have the representatives come up first, because he has a PowerPoint. That way you don't have to stay for the whole presentation unless you would like to. So Representative Nolan, Representative Wisnant, come on up. That's okay. We'll let you come up.
I have a power presentation, but it doesn't involve
you have computer. Membership. That's
okay.
You got the membership card.
And I think... Madam Chair, that Senator Walker wanted to testify.
Is Senator Walker here? I didn't see her.
Just send a note down to her in committee.
Yes.
In committee.
So why don't we get started? Representative Nolan, since you are the chair of the committee, why don't you introduce us to this bill, and then we'll hear from Representative Wisnant.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I will leave to Director Whitman to get into the finer details, both fine in terms of precise and fine in terms of quality of the bill. What I wanted to do is just frame why the committee that I chair, the House Land Use Committee, considered this bill, why we worked on it, and how we amended it to bring it to your attention. Tourism is certainly a significant and valuable part of the Oregon economy, whether it is Rose Festival or Pendleton Roundup or beaches or mountains or museums or remote hiking trails. We rely on tourism as part of our complex economy to support jobs and communities in Oregon. Destination resorts can be an important part of that complex economy. And there are currently in law two ways that developers and local communities can cooperate to site a destination resort under Oregon law. One is kind of the conventional approach through the comprehensive planning and exceptions process, which several resorts have used to site their facilities and to plan expansions. About 20 years ago, and I'm sure Mr. Whitman will give you more details on that, the legislature thought that it would be helpful to promote tourism and the jobs that it creates to create a special section of law focused just on destination resorts, which would essentially create a shortcut in order to be supportive of this activity. It is that section of law that this bill proposes to update, since it was established sometime in the 80s, I think early to mid-80s. And what we heard in testimony was that there was some value to update that to current conditions. And as you'll see as Mr. Whitman goes through the details of the bill, part of that updating is to address some areas where local control, more local control is helpful, and appropriate in the context of both the statewide planning goals but also economic development objectives. And so part of the bill does that. And part of it also addresses some new considerations that really hadn't been either significant or measurable when the original bill was enacted. And that largely relates to two areas, high fire hazard in some remote areas where destination resorts might make sense, and a concern that perhaps we needed to not create ignition points, things that would add to the fire danger either of the forests, the timberland, or the people and structures living in the communities that the destination resorts created. And then the other updating area, the other significant one, is around irrigation districts. Madam Chair, you know better than anyone in this building issues around water availability, both quality and quantity. And the concern has become over the last couple of decades that if we are creating irrigation districts in an era of scarcity of water, that resource should be preserved for productive land, farm, and forest rather than for a more urban or residential use like a destination resort. Those are the two significant parts of the bill, a little bit of opening up for local control to support and encourage the siting of destination resorts, and a little bit of updating around areas of fire suppression and irrigation districts so that they are brought up to modern terms. Some additional issues around how we modernize things or update it with respect to investments in recreational facilities that might be required of those who propose to site destination resorts. I believe that this bill, as it is presented to you, is very supportive of destination resorts. It's very supportive of our tourism economy. It creates a great partnership between the state and county governments in supporting, managing, and promoting this asset for our economy. And it has the potential to support job growth and community self-sufficiency around the state. The final point I would make sure I call to the committee's attention is that we had some debate in our committee on the House side about the value of this combination of changes in terms of being available immediately to developers, to communities, and to counties. And we debated whether to make the bill effective immediately. But we, in the end, in order to provide some balance, we left the bill without any kind of emergency clause. So it is prospective only. Applications currently in the system are not subject to the regulations, the changes that are proposed in this bill. It is my understanding that even applications submitted between now and the current effective date of next January 1 would be handled under current law, not under this new bill. With that, I will answer questions or just commend the bill to your consideration.
Okay, thank you. We'll see if there's any questions for Representative Nolan. Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks.
Representative Wisnett.
Madam Chair, for the record, Gene Wisnett, House District 53. Madam Chair and committee members, District 53 could be called the resort district. This bill is about resorts. I think that I know probably more about resorts than any member of this body. Madam Chair, I was not on the working group in the House that developed this bill or brought this bill to you today. If you'll see from the record, the committee vote was partisan. The floor vote was 31-28. Speaker Hunt voted against the bill. Madam Chair and committee members, I live in a district that's looking at 16% unemployment. Jefferson County is 18%. Crook County is 20%. Madam Chair and members, I'm not against, and I know we have some problems in siting resorts, and we can look at this. This bill started off as a study bill. This bill before you now
is not a study bill. It's an implementation to take away your decision and my decision on what and how we site resorts. You have in front of you my 17-minute passionate speech on the floor that resulted in the 31-28 vote. I will give you the liberty of not going over that because you're going to have a lot of good testimony today. The good representative and majority leader, we agree that it may be time to look at designation resorts, but I'm not ready to give up my oversight of that to a state agency, and that's what this bill does. This bill takes away from you and me the authority to give guidance for designation resorts. This body is the one that established a special way, as the good representative from Portland said, so we can expedite. There is a procedure to build resorts without the language and without this bill we have. But this body saw fit to try to help rural and Eastern Oregon when we lost our timber industry. And this bill will take away our tourism, or our opportunity, our future tourism industry. The good representative from Portland talked about irrigation. You're going to hear how if you map out the irrigation districts in Central Oregon, there is no land for siting resorts. Is that what this body wants to do? I've also attached for you the editorial from the Bend Bulletin. Colleagues, we're hurting in Eastern Oregon. You know, I'm not opposed, and I would look forward to working and being a part of the team that looked at things that we need to maybe change about resorts, siting those resorts, or what conditions we put on there to be sure that they're addressing fire dangers and being sure that they're protecting water. The good chair lady and I worked a couple of sessions ago on being sure that the Deschutes River mitigation is working. We can do that. We can work together. But that should be our authority and our decisions, not a state agency, and that's what this bill does. This bill takes away local control. You're going to hear from the county commissioner of Deschutes County. We have not done anything wrong. You know, there's maybe some things that we could do better. And also in my testimony, you'll see that Crook County citizens passed a measure that says we don't want any more resorts. They have a moratorium. Well, that's fine. The system works. But don't turn over our authority to site, to build, to employ people by giving it to a state agency.
Okay, thank you. Any questions for the representative? All right, and the senator showed up just in time. Thank you, Representative, for sharing your testimony today. We're letting you off easy without questions. Senator, you're up, and then we'll have the director back up to give the presentation.
Okay, great.
It is a PowerPoint presentation, so we wanted to let representatives and senators go first.
I appreciate it, Madam Chair. Vicki Walker, State Senator, District 7, here to testify in opposition to House Bill 2227. I'm not quite sure what's going on here, but I'm kind of uncomfortable with it, so I decided to come and make my voice heard. This is a bill that really says to rural Oregon, we don't care about your economy. Rural Oregon has significant unemployment problems, as you all are quite well aware. And destination resorts are allowed under statute for rural Oregon because Goal 8 of the LCDC goals pretty much say that resorts must be sited in a setting with high natural amenities. Land cannot be mapped for a destination resort if it is within 24 air miles of an urban growth boundary with an existing population of 100,000 or more, unless residential uses are limited to those necessary for the staff and management of the resort. In essence, these destination resorts cannot be near Eugene's, Springfield, Portland, or Salem, the three largest cities. So we're basically saying to rural Oregon that with this bill that we have limited your ability to bring employment into your area. I think you'll have a great deal of testimony today that says rural Oregon appreciates destination resorts, and rural Oregon actually appreciates the ability to say no to destination resorts when they feel they've had enough of them, which Crook County has done by ballot measure. They have asked to slow down, no more resorts, and so now the county cannot remap for another 30 months. So, Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm not sure what we're trying to do today. We're making a lot of assumptions in this bill. I'm not sure why this bill does not have a fiscal. If I hear one more agency director tell me they can absorb something within their existing budget, I will cut their budget in half. Because, quite frankly, Madam Chair, last session a lot of agencies said that, and they're coming back this session wanting money to do the work that they said they could absorb in their budget. Now, I have the DLCD budget in my committee. Here's the notebook. I'm looking at the 30% cuts that the director has provided to our committee as I co-chair the Natural Resources Committee on which you sit, and there is over $4 million in cuts and six FTEs. So I'm not sure how the agency can absorb this in their budget. And believe me, if the bill passes, I will be asking those questions when we get to the work session on their budget. But what I'm here to say mostly is that, Madam Chair, there's a lot of hysteria about destination resorts this session, a lot of bills, a lot of conversation, and I think that we need to slow down and let the rural communities make up their own mind about where they want to go with destination resorts. We have clear statutory guidelines, and we have clear rules in Goal 8. So that would be my testimony today.
Thank you, Senator. Any questions for the Senator? Okay, thank you both for coming to the committee to testify. I know you're both very busy. Director Whitman, can you come up and finish your presentation, and then we'll start calling up witnesses. We do have a floor session, evening floor session at 5 o'clock today, so I'm going to ask people, just remind folks, that if you have written testimony, please hand it in and please summarize your testimony if you can. Otherwise, I'm going to start using the dreaded stopwatch if we start running out of time. We do have people that came over 100 miles today, so as soon as the director testifies, I will be calling them up first to make sure that we do hear them. I know that we'll probably end with the lobbyists because I know they can come back if we run out of time. Director. Yeah. And then we'll X the lobbyists.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Again, for the record, Richard Whitman, Director of the Department of Land Conservation and Development. I'm going to try to keep my presentation relatively short, as I know people have traveled a long way to testify today. But I do want to cover two things briefly. First, I want to provide the committee with some background on destination resorts in Oregon, how they evolved, where we're at today in terms of this important part of our land use program. And second, I want to focus a little bit on House Bill 2227-A. I think there are some misconceptions about what the bill does, what the intent of the bill is, and I want to try to clear those up. So first of all, just very briefly, in terms of where we are with resorts today. Destination resorts started out before we had a statewide land use program in the 1960s and 1970s with the development of well-known resorts, Salishan, Sun River, and others. In the 1970s and 80s, we had the establishment of the statewide land use program. A principal component of that are, as you know, Goal 3 and Goal 4, which limit to a great extent uses that are allowed in our agricultural and forest areas. With those restrictions on uses in large parts of the rural area of the state, destination resorts are not allowed in those areas that are zoned for forest use or zoned for agricultural use. That meant that in the early part of the statewide land use program, the only way a new resort could get approved was by taking an exception to those goals. It was felt, looking at that process, that the exceptions process was very cumbersome. There's a lot of risk, case-by-case decision-making on whether or not to take an exception to a goal resulted in protracted legal battles that, in effect, made it very difficult to site any new destination resorts in the state of Oregon. So in 1982, there was a task force chaired by Stafford Hansel that reviewed the land use program. It was really the first big look and recommended that the state put in place an easier way to site destination resorts in Oregon. That then led to a subcommittee of the Land Conservation and Development Commission, Economic Development Commission, that developed what is now today Goal 8. And there were three main pieces to what they were trying to do. First of all, that destination resorts be focused on visitor accommodations, overnight lodging. The reason for that is the idea is to bring new dollars into a region. This is not about building new housing in a particular area. It's to build a type of development that brings dollars in to help economic development in a particular part of the state. In order to do that, the second element is also to require develop recreational facilities that would have that draw for visitors, and that there also be outstanding natural features nearby that would again draw people to those settings. So the whole idea was very much focused on overnight accommodations, longer stays, generate new money into a region, generate taxes with a low demand for public services. And other things that were put in to accomplish those, a minimum 160-acre site for a large destination resort. 50% of that has to be open space. $7 million minimum has to be spent on visitor-oriented accommodations. There have to be at least 150 units of overnight lodging. And then there's a limit on non-overnights as well. So where are we today? Well, we've got eight counties that have adopted destination resort mapping. It is a two-step process that was put in place under Goal 8. Goal 8 was then incorporated into statute in the 1980s. You see the eight counties that have mapped. And then other counties have continued to use that original process for siting destination resorts. The principal example of that is Bandon Dunes down in Coos County. So we now have over 10 destination resorts in the state of Oregon that have been sited through this process. Most of them are in central Oregon. There are a couple on the coast that have been approved but not built. This is a chart of resort approvals in central Oregon. I'm not going to go through it in detail, but I want to draw your attention to the totals at the bottom. We've got a total resort acreage of over 26,000 acres in central Oregon, involving almost 10,000 single-family lots that have been approved, and a little over 1,000 overnight accommodations. So this is a fairly large-scale type of development in this part of the state at this point. So coming into this session, working on this bill, it is an agency bill, House Bill 2227, we were concerned with two things: how to make resorts work more effectively to promote economic development, and how to control adverse effects of resorts that we've seen from the resort development that has occurred. I'm going to talk about each of those briefly and how the bill accomplishes each of those two things. First of all, how to make resorts work more effectively to promote economic development. We've seen a fair amount of resort development that has involved substantial amount of development of residential lots, not just visitor-oriented accommodations, but essentially rural subdivisions. That competes in the market with development within cities. It also tends to draw more in terms of public service and facility demands than a visitor-oriented type of development. So how does the bill address this? It would have a requirement that the primary use of this type of development be overnight accommodations. I'll point out that it's not a one-size-fits-all. We didn't come up with a number or a ratio. This is left up to each county to determine exactly what that means and how that's implemented. The second issue, I pointed out that the current statutory requirements include spending over $7 million for developed recreational facilities and that the site for a destination resort be more than 160 acres. These are large developments. In effect, we have been told by counties in outside of Central Oregon that those requirements create barriers to entry in terms of destination resort development that are preventing destination resort development from occurring in those parts of the state. That includes Southern Oregon and to some extent the coast as well. This bill would remove those requirements in statute and remove those barriers to entry, allowing destination resort development to occur in parts of the state where it has not. The third issue is, and we heard from the good representative from Central Oregon, about the high level of unemployment there. How do we target this type of development to areas of the state that have high levels of unemployment? Well, this bill, again, by removing some of the statutory provisions, would give the Land Conservation and Development Commission the flexibility to provide incentives for resorts to occur in those areas of the state that have not benefited from that type of development. The second thing I want to speak to is concerns that have come out of destination resort development that has occurred in the state, and there are a series of issues that have come up over time. The first is conflict with big game habitat. We hear from state and federal agencies about the cost of damage control when large-scale developments are sited in areas that are heavily used by deer and elk populations. We hear about the effect on winter range and key habitat. We also hear concerns about the fact that the mapping that's done for resort eligibility is now based on mapping that was done by the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife back in 1984. There's no provision in the current statute to allow for updating of that information. So the solution is that Section 5 of the bill would, again, give flexibility to update that mapping of important wildlife habitat to reflect current conditions so that we're not prohibiting resorts in areas of the state where they should be allowed and vice versa. The second issue, substantive issue, is competition for water. Because of the requirement in the destination resort statutes that this type of development include over $7 million in developed recreational facilities, what that has meant in effect is that most destination resorts include golf courses. And I have nothing against golf courses. It's a perfectly fine type of recreation, but it is a heavy use of water. In some parts of the state where we have significant shortages of water and competition for water, we now get into conflicts between destination resorts and other types of development that need to occur within those regions of the state, including normal growth of cities and other communities in those regions. So the bill would, as you've heard, prevent the siting of destination resorts within irrigation districts. This means that the resorts would have to go out and obtain their own water rights, and they would have to get in line with everybody else in terms of the priority of those water rights rather than being within an irrigation district. Third issue, conflict with agricultural infrastructure and practices. There are provisions in current law that prevent destination resorts within 3 miles of a high-value crop area. Again, this bill would also prevent the siting of resorts within irrigation districts so that the critical mass of lands for agriculture to support those irrigation districts is retained. Two more issues, very briefly. Transportation. Right now, when a destination resort is cited under the existing statutes, that is not done as an amendment to a comprehensive plan. As a result, the ability of a county doing the siting and the ability of other communities nearby, such as a city that's affected by a destination resort, is limited in terms of addressing transportation issues. So there are provisions in the bill in Section 6 to require avoidance or mitigation of transportation impacts, including transportation impacts that cross jurisdictional lines. This has been an issue for resort siting in Central Oregon, particularly with the city of Redmond. The last issue, Chair Nolan addressed briefly, wildland fire risk. There are several aspects of that. One, increased protection costs when you put those homes out in the middle of a relatively undeveloped area. You're then going to need to commit resources to protecting that development. Secondly, when you that sort of development occurs, you're also looking at increased treatment costs for treating the forest in the vicinity of that development. And then finally, of course, there's risk to the public. So the bill would add provisions that direct new destination resorts away from the very highest risk areas in terms of wildland fire. So I can, if you wish, Madam Chair, walk through the bill, but I think in the interest of time and because of the number of people here, I'll stop there. I think I've hit on the major points in terms of this bill being intended to bring the benefits of destination resorts to areas of the state that have not benefited from resorts by removing barriers and by addressing some of the concerns that have occurred from destination resort that's occurred over the last 20 years in the state. So thank you. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Okay. Any questions for Director Whitman?
Yes.
Senator Poznanski and Senator Boquist.
Yeah, Richard, when you gave the overview, I guess when the original plans and statute was put together, you stated about the limit on non-overnight lodging units, 2-to-1. Is it 2 non-overnight units to 1, or is it vice versa?
Chair Dingfelder, Senator Poznanski, it's 2 non-overnight to 1 overnight is the ratio.
All right. And then if I could, when you go to the chart that you had up on the board showing what is on the ground, could you just, that you have like single-family lots approved, and then the next column is lots platted.
That's correct.
And then you have the overnight accommodation. So if I was just taking, let's just say, the Deschutes Eagle Crest 1, 2, 3, 1983, it shows that there's 1,083 lots that have been approved and 985 plotted. Can you tell us how many are actually been built from this?
Chair Dingfelder, Senator Poznanski, so that means that there are 985 lots that have been created. Those now exist as separate legal lots. It does not necessarily mean that there is a dwelling on them. I do not have the numbers on actual numbers of homes on those lots, but we can try to get that for you.
Well, my question, if I could, Madam Chair, the next column is the overnight accommodation showing there's just under 400 existing, and it seems to be reverse in the sense that it seems if it's supposed to be 2-to-1, shouldn't we be seeing the overnight accommodations being basically double whatever the single family?
No, Madam Chair, Senator Poznanski, it is the other way. It's okay. The ratio of residences to overnight, and that's a little misleading, is 2-to-1.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Senator Boquist.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Two questions, Director. I'm only slightly confused now because less than 2 weeks ago you were here saying we should eliminate two resorts, potential resorts on the eastern side, and now you're saying you support building resorts, so I'm only slightly confused between the testimony. And then I'd like you to clarify $7 million. I understand that sounds like a lot of money, but on the eastern side, that's probably a dozen houses or so. So what's the logic between getting rid of a $7 million number and what can you really build for $7 million? I know on this side you can't build much for seven. You couldn't build no destination resort even with a half dozen houses.
So, Chair Dingfelder, Senator Boquist, thank you for that question. I do want to point out that the department does not oppose everything, and we do work with counties throughout the state to try to get development to occur. That is part of the title of my agency. We have worked with Klamath County, for instance, on their most recent destination resort. Have not been in opposition to that, are supportive of their effort, and have worked with other counties to get destination resorts sited and built. This is an economic development tool for the state. That is how it was originally envisioned. That is, to a large extent, it is still working that way. We just feel that it's time for some course corrections to make sure that it continues to work that way and doesn't conflict with other types of development. So we're very supportive of destination resorts. We really are. And then, I'm sorry, Senator Boquist, I've forgotten your second question.
$7 million.
Oh, yes. not setting a minimum investment standard for someone outside of the state.
So Chair Dingfelder, Senator Boquist, on the $7 million, I'd point out that number is under the terms of the statute and also Goal 8, there's an inflator. So it's actually, I don't know what the current number is, but it is actually higher than that now. And you're correct that the retail value of homes in Central Oregon is quite high, and that may not seem like a big number. But for a developer just starting out with a speculative development, having to make an upfront expenditure of $7+ million on recreational facilities is a fairly significant upfront cost. In terms of getting that development to pencil from the developer's point of view. So, and I know from discussions with some Southern Oregon counties that this has been an issue for some proposed resorts in other areas. And I think if we have an area of the state where there are other natural amenities that can be a draw for resort development, and we don't really need to have somebody spending $7 million, we can perhaps encourage resorts to occur in those areas by removing that requirement.
Quickly.
I would just like you to follow up offline, because, I'm not buying the $7 million mark at all. I'd like to know the inflator. Actually, it'd be higher, not lower. Right.
Well, this legislation actually takes that out. Is that correct?
Chair Dingfelder, that's correct. I do want to point out, so we don't confuse people, if I may, many of these requirements exist in parallel in LCDC's Goal 8, Statewide Planning Goal 8. You've heard that referred to. They would stay there until Goal 8 is amended. And this is, we heard reference to work for the department on this. There is nothing in this legislation that requires the department to do anything to amend Goal 8 immediately. So for right now, this bill has been designed to be self-executing and to not require any immediate work by the commission. It may be in order to promote resorts in particular areas that it's desirable for the commission to do that, but this bill doesn't require that right now.
So just a clarification, we take it out of the statute, not out of the rule, and that's part of it is it's parallel in statute and in rule currently. Thank you.
I'm still opposed.
Okay. Thank you for the questions. Thank you for the clarification. Okay, we have less than 50 minutes, and I have just under 20 people that want to testify. So we are going to limit testimony to 2 minutes. I'm calling up out of the area folks first, and as I mentioned, lobbyists, we know that you're always in the building, so I'm going to have actual citizens come up first. Beth is going to keep our time, and first I'm going to call up John Skidmore. He came from more than 100 miles. Alan Unger and Charlie Ringo. And just a reminder, if you have written testimony, please submit it to the committee assistant, and please make sure and state your name for the record. Okay. Time is a-wasting, so please get started.
I could defer to Commissioner Unger.
Okay. Commissioner, if you'd like to start, welcome.
Yes.
It's good to see you again.
Thank you.
Congratulations. Chair. When I saw you were running, and I don't think I've seen you since you won your election.
Well, thank you. I'm enjoying it, too. Chair Dingfelder and members of the committee, I'm Alan Unger, the newest Deschutes County Commissioner. I was the mayor of Redmond for the last 8 years, the city surrounded by resorts. Destination resorts provide significant benefits to Central Oregon and Deschutes County, our economies, our communities, and our recreational amenities, but they also impact our facilities, services, and our natural environment. So Deschutes County is committed to maximizing the benefits of resorts and mitigating the adverse impacts. We do not oppose House Bill 2227 as introduced, allowing LCDC to the authority to revise and update the requirements requirements of destination resorts in rural areas. However, the amendments to 7 as supported in the House of Representatives, we do oppose those because they limit local control, such as prohibiting the resorts in irrigation districts and changing the goals on the siting process. Local control is important. Many areas of the state are different and unique, and citizen involvement is very important. The economy, if you look at my paper on the sidebar there, it shows the significant economic benefits they provide. $2.5 billion in current resort real market value. 2.5 million people come to Central Oregon. $470 million of direct services and so on. Taxes, they provide $35 million in taxes to Deschutes County and to school districts, and you can see on the box below basically how those are paid. And if you turn the page over and look at the another sidebar, it says the resort tax breakdown. You'll see it gives Deschutes County $4 million, the sheriff almost $4 million, 911 $1 million, and to education $18 million, which goes to the state and then comes back to us. So that's all very important. And we use this money in Deschutes County to help with providing more services. So you can read through this more and just let us know we support the original bill. We want to continue having these conversations. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Commissioner Ringer. Appreciate your testimony. Mr. Ringo.
Hi, thank you. Members of the committee, Senator Dingfelder, Charlie Ringo, living in Bend. It's nice
our state senator.
Nice to see all of you, and I hope you manage to get through the budget cycle without too much blood this session. I've lived in Bend for almost 3 years now, and it's been an interesting perspective learning more about the destination resort issue. And I'd like to start just by giving one little story. About 2 years ago, my family and I went east of Bend to go hiking. And on the way back, we were taking some back roads and said, well, you know, there's the sign for Pronghorn. Let's go in there and get something to eat or maybe get some ice cream. And we took the long access road, and we got to the gate, and the guard said, sorry, you can't come in. And it wasn't because we were driving an old shabby car. It's because Pronghorn does not want people coming in to spend money. And I think this illustrates what's right and what's wrong with destination resorts. Pronghorn was developed under the destination resort law, but it doesn't promote tourism. It doesn't allow people to go there and spend money. If you get on its website and you're trying to find out, gee, can I stay overnight at Pronghorn, they don't encourage that. They don't invite it. They want you to go stay overnight in Bend. And so I think the real issue with destination resorts isn't are they good or bad. I think a lot of them are good. I grew up in Corvallis, and for years our family has gone to Sun River. And if you go to Sun River right now, you can't help but bump into people from Seattle or San Francisco or anywhere around the country that have come there to spend money. And I think that is carrying out the function of stimulating the local economy exactly as Commissioner Unger just described. The question, though, is how do you distinguish between the destination resorts that are really carrying out that function and those that are really just rural subdivisions or private golf communities for millionaires? And that is the challenge, and I've considered a lot about how to address this challenge, and I think the answer is LCDC's got to do rulemaking. Right now, this is just it's a big loophole in our land use system. It's got to be pushed to LCDC to come up with some rules. So that's why I urge you to pass House Bill 2227. Let them fix the problem.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is John Skidmore. I'm a planning consultant. I live in Bend as well. I'm going to take a little different tack than the previous speaker. I've worked on both sides of the counter. I've worked as a county planner. I've worked for developers, and so I've proposed as well as regulated the resorts. And there may be some flaws with them. However, I don't think handing this issue over to DLCD is really the way to do it. What we've seen in the past few months, DLCD went through and did the management plan for the Metolius Basin, demonstrated blatant disregard for the planning system, made the call that they were not subject to the planning goals and guidelines, did not send out notice, didn't share facts, a lot of their suggestions weren't relying on findings of fact. They made a token approach to really coordinate with the local jurisdictions. So Handing it over to DLCD makes me a little bit nervous. Central Oregon is really based on tourism these days. I'd rather not see the fate of our future tourism rest in their hands. I think a better approach may be to take a regional approach to this. You know, you have the authority to set up regional task force to look at this issue. You can set up a task force that contain people from the county, cities, resorts, environmental community, et cetera, and really look at the issue from there. You don't need to decide this session. The market has hit the pause button on these resorts for the time being. What I'd suggest is you come back at the next session and perhaps authorize these regional study groups. ORS 197-440 says that the siting of destination resorts are an issue of statewide concern. I'm not so sure if I agree with that, but the impacts that are felt by the resorts are definitely a local and regional issue. So the impacts from pronghorn aren't felt here in Salem. They're not here felt in Portland. They're felt in Central Oregon. So if it's a Central Oregon problem or a problem on the coast, I'd advise you to set up regional advisory groups to actually look at it and then go back to the LCD for rulemaking. So I'd urge you to oppose it. I'd also like to note that you're all up here. You're looking after the best interests of your constituents. Please note that none of the legislators from Central Oregon support this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Thank you, gentlemen, very much for sharing your testimony and coming all the way here today. Next up, we have Linda Swearinger, if I'm getting that right, Molly Eden, and Gary Eder. Okay. Welcome. Why don't you get started, please?
Okay. For the record, I'm going to be very brief. My name is Linda Swearinger, and I represent Fidelity National. We had a destination resort that was approved in Crescent Gilchrist, and during the House hearings, we were able to get the House to go on record that existing resorts would be protected, and anything that was in the pipeline until this became law was protected as well. But I would like to say, as a former mayor of Sisters, a Deschutes County Commissioner, the executive director of the City of Redmond, for their chamber, that destination resorts are big business. They create 2,000, we have 2,000 jobs a year. 15% of the tax roll comes from destination resorts, and I think it's too important of an issue to just allow DLCD to come in through the rulemaking process and make sweeping changes. It really needs to be studied, then come back to this legislative body, and then make the changes that are necessary, because unfortunately it's very difficult to address all the issues surrounding destination resorts in this limited legislative session, and we really need to take a longer period of time to study the issues and then come back and make the changes. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your time. And Molly Eden and Gary Eder? Or is Molly here?
No, she's not.
Okay, so Nunzi Gould. Okay. Welcome.
Hello, how are you today?
Good.
I think I gave you all my copies. I'm sorry.
Grab one for you, Nunzi.
Yeah, Nunzi, why don't you go ahead while we're getting copies?
Senate Committee on the Environment and Natural Resources. Hello. Thank you for allowing me to testify. I moved to Oregon over 18 years ago.
Can you just state your name again?
Nunzi Gould. I live in Deschutes County.
Okay, thank you.
And I drove over today. It was snowing on the pass a little bit. I moved to Oregon over 18 years ago from Maryland. What attracted me to Oregon was her natural resources, recreation, scenic beauty, and future that I saw for my life. I live in Deschutes County on EFU-zoned land and am a member of the Tumalo Irrigation District. I irrigate with 16 acres of Tumalo Irrigation District water, which is supplied through snowmelt and surface water runoff. Twice a summer, I harvest hay. I am in support of House Bill 2227, A hyphen engrossed, and support page 6, line 4, which will not allow resorts to site within an irrigation district. When irrigation water is removed from the land in exchange for a mitigation program that allows for groundwater withdrawal from our aquifer, There is not equity for Oregon's natural resources. Water is this most precious resource. In Central Oregon, the Deschutes Aquifer is colder and cleaner than surface irrigation water. My comments today are to encourage you to protect cold water resources for fisheries and river health, which is shown by USGS to be directly correlated to cold water spring recharge along, within, and from underneath our rivers. Thank you for your vote in favor of this bill as written. And I'd like to just make one quick comment in reference to Senator Walker's introductory comments. There is no hysteria here. There are very clear, loud voices from our community. And I would encourage you, when you look at statistics, since this legislation revolves around Goal 8 resorts, that you not dilute the statistics from the very few Goal 8 resorts that have been approved with statistics from the historic resorts, such as Black Butte, Sun River, Inn of the Seventh Mountain, or those throughout the rest of the community. I really encourage you to look very carefully at the data that will show you that resorts, as they are defined as Goal 8, really do need a reevaluation on a statewide level, and I thank you.
Thank you for coming over here today.
My name is Gary Eater, and I'm from Crook County. The one county that voted down resorts, we'd like to keep them out of our farm ground. I'm going to read a letter from my wife. I also brought some signatures from neighbors that I gathered early this morning. They're irrigators that do not want any more resorts in our farm ground. There's also a letter from a gentleman that he wrote as well, so I appreciate your time. This is a letter that my wife wrote, and then I have one more comment afterwards of my own. My name is Molly Eater, and I'm a rancher and resident of Powell Butte in Crook County. As you know, Central Oregon is an area which has many resorts approved. And in fact, the resorts are starting to seem like Starbucks, one on every corner. When these resorts are all built out, I believe our area will become just like which the tourists are hoping to escape. Crowds, pollution, crime-ridden, rather than agricultural, pastoral, and peaceful. One of the most important provisions is of HB 2227, and the one that I wish to address today is Section 5.1c. It states that resorts may not be sited on land that is within an irrigation district. As a person who grows hay and cattle, it has always been my belief that farmland must be protected for the future of our country, while continue to need a high-quality and plentiful supply of food. Additionally, knowing that agricultural wellness and vitality are critical links to Oregon and overall well-being, I believe it is essential to place limits to keep resorts out of irrigation districts. Section 5.1b is another critical provision for protecting agriculture, as it maintains a 3-mile buffer between high-value crop areas and resorts. According to Oregon Farm Bureau, the total economic impact of agriculture is close to $12 billion, accounting for nearly 10% of our gross state product.
I'll let you finish up. Go ahead.
Let's be careful not to harm such an important sector of our economy and not to harm the 40,000 farming families in our state. Let's keep resorts out of irrigation districts. Thank you for your consideration of this and the proposed reform to improve the site and destination of resorts. I appreciate it, and I know my farming and ranching neighbors do too. In fact, I have no doubt that the Oregon statewide and future will look back and see that you have done the right thing by preserving an industry and a way of life and landscape as important as agriculture. For myself, I've been ranching for about 30 years. Started off on 7 acres. Now we've raised some cattle and hay on 120 acres, 112 which is irrigated. I would love to see an emergency clause to stop any resorts upon your passage of this provision.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you both for coming all the way here today. We appreciate you sharing your testimony. Thank you. We have a quick question from Senator Boquist.
Two questions, because both of you talked about irrigation districts. I'm familiar that there's at least one or two water companies over there that pump millions of dollars out of domestic water into bottles and ship it outside of the state of Oregon. Your comments on that, I mean, it's not just irrigation districts and destination resorts, but we're sending our water out of the state in bottles out of stuff. I mean, does that have an impact on the water? And the second thing, over looking at the LCDC, there's at least four or five destination resorts that have been approved or in process that haven't built and met the standards, places like Pronghorn and Thornburg and three in Crook County, like Remington, Cross Tiles, a handful of them. Should we stop those? I'm trying to get a grasp of what we did in Crook County. Did we stop those in those tracks, or are those grandfathered in?
Well, let me speak to Crook County's, since Crossing Trails happens to be across from my ranch. Crossing Trails is, they've been approved on the county level. Crossing Trails, in my opinion, is that they have RV pads with casitas. A casita is a small area with a bathroom and a bedroom with a hot plate, which was approved by the county. So if that's with three major transmission lines running through less than 600 acres with 598 homes or 589 homes or whatever that number is, it's somewhere close to 500 or more. Trying to ranch next to those is going to make it really hard on my neighbors. We run cattle. We still do cattle drives on horses, using four-wheelers on horseback or using dogs. It's going to make it difficult. No, we have not stopped them. Our county still, if you talk to our county officials, they would still love to have resorts, even though the citizens have said no more. We said no more resorts. They have approved, they've left the three approved, and the one part may be approved, the Crossing Trails, it's still in appeals. I'm afraid our county officials do not like to listen to their citizens. That's my opinion. And as far as your water issue, I love using their bottles to fill it from my well. My well water is just as good, if not better, than anything they can produce.
Chair Dingfelder, Senator Boquist, I think there are states in this union that do not allow for the export of water. And I think in our lifetimes there will be a greater and greater demand for water exported. Specifically, Central Oregon has been identified to be the source of water for the Northwest in the future, and I encourage you to read USGS data to support that. That was a huge awakening to me. We're not talking about Mount Hood watershed water. We're talking about further south. We're talking about the Sisters Range. And when I drove over the mountain today, the rivers are high. We've had a lot of rainfall. Water is coming out because it's occurring in this wetter pattern right now. Earlier, regarding Opal Springs, I'm glad the community has embraced recycling plastic water bottles. I think you're referring to the Opal Springs up along the Crooked River. And what I'd like to speak to on that context is not long ago, a natural gas-fired power plant to be water-cooled was proposed for very close to that area. It was known as Cogentrix. You may have followed that. That was resoundingly shut down by folks in our area who said, no, we do not want you to tap into our deep, cold groundwater resources for cooling for power generation. And that project was nipped in the bud. Regarding water mitigation and significance on wildlife, I think it is worthwhile to know that one of the proposed resorts is currently pending a LUBA final master plan review. And this case has been quite the seesaw, where so many aspects of what is being described in this entire bill have been brought to the fore. And again, there's a lot of history and a lot of development of resorts that never needed to meet this Goal 8 requirement. And we're now at Goal 8 requirement, and I really encourage you to look carefully to see who really has built the overnight units that are required under Goal 8 statute, and who is just bonded for it. Because if I could quote a senior planning official for Deschutes County who two nights ago spoke at our community association, he said, "Let's be real frank. Resorts need to sell dirt."
Thank you. Thank you both for coming here today. Appreciate you coming all the way here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Next, we have Alan Van Fleet and Eric Chancellor. And then that's everybody from 100, I think, anybody else from 100 miles away? Okay.
Oh, no.
No, we can take his name off. Okay, Alan, could you get started, please?
Sure. Chairman, Chair Dingfelder and committee members, I'm Alan Van Vliet. I'm the Vice President of Construction and Development for Sheldon. And we've developed three resorts here in Oregon over the past 24 years, so we speak with a lot of experience here. I'm here to oppose House Bill 2227. We've said all along that this whole notion of destination resorts needs to be updated, and we agree with that, and it needs to be studied, and then the changes need to be made. And that's what we're here to deliver that message today. You know, there's been a lot of discussion about water, and I have some written testimony which you can read, but I'm going to go away from that just a little bit. The irrigation district issue seems striking to me, because all of our resorts are sited in irrigation districts. Our golf courses are irrigated with state-of-the-art equipment. We actually use less water than farmers would for the same amount of acreage. The excess water that we don't use goes back into the system, rivers, etc. You know, I'm here to basically hammer home the point that the destination resorts should be studied, and their impacts, both pro and con, and then make the appropriate changes.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Eric Chancellor. I'm the Executive Director of Central Oregon Land Watch. We are supportive of House Bill 2227A engrossed. We feel it's important to move this issue forward so that we can find models of destination resorts that work for Oregon, that are fiscally sustainable, that are environmentally sustainable, and that benefit local communities. The model for resorts that we have now, which is essentially exurban golf course subdivisions, is not working out as advertised. When they're successful, they cost local taxpayers many millions of dollars. As a recent study that we commissioned concluded, the case study that we looked at, and the net cost taxpayers $45 million. That doesn't sound like a benefit for local taxpayers and local communities. When resorts fail, as we've seen with Tamarack Resort out in Idaho, and a number of Central Oregon resorts have faced financial problems as well, they leave workers without jobs, contractors without payments, and local communities without a vision for the future. Either way, the way we see it, these developments are problematic. We do feel it's important, as a number of people have said, to distinguish between Goal 8 resorts and historic resorts such as Black Butte and Sun River, which they may not be perfect, but at least they're focused on tourism, and they've served a purpose in the region. The difference is most striking when viewed through their respective websites, and former State Senator Charlie Ringo has already made that point, so I'll skip ahead. If the Oregon legislature wishes to find a model for resorts, multiple models for resorts that work for Oregon, it should pass House Bill 2227. Without its passage, we're left with a broken model and no path forward. We think that the current bill provides the direction that DLCD needs to take the process in, and we urge your support for the bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? All right. Thank you very much, gentlemen. Thanks for coming here today. We know you came a long way. Okay, I'm just going to start going down the list, then, of people who signed up now that we've heard from folks 100 miles away. David Enger, am I saying that right? And David Harrison, Brock Hell. Can you come up, please?
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is David Engen. I live here in Salem, and I have lived in the area for over 40 years. last year, I came across a forestry magazine that had a very interesting article about the wildlands urban interface and the fact that the Forest Service was spending most of its budget protecting private property, which was built next to public forests. And I'm afraid that some of these resorts are going to fit right into that category. Now, the Global Warming Commission has come out and it's emphasized compact development and reduction of auto use, and destination resorts do not fit in either one of those. They're essentially new towns and cities now, at least most of them. We need to protect wildlife, water, forests, farmland, and the taxpayers' pocketbook. The county has approved a destination resort on the Elkhorn River, which is actually in Marion County. It is at the end of a long mountain road, which is slumping into the river. And it's at the end of this long mountain road, and they're going to have a heck of a time getting emergency services up there when they need them. I went to sea for 40 years in the Navy and the Merchant Marine, and I'll tell you, it was a great feeling to get back to Oregon because of what our predecessors in the state had done to preserve our environment. Thank you very much for hearing me out.
Thank you for coming here today to testify. I think I called you up next, so why don't you go ahead, David?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm David Harrison. I live in Salem. As president of the Salem Audubon Society, I speak on behalf of our 1,600 members in supporting House Bill 2227. As you've heard, destination resorts were a statute enacting destination resorts occurred because of an effort to promote tourism. Unfortunately, we've strayed from that original purpose to the point where so-called destination resorts are really just large second home developments which would otherwise be prohibited. You've heard this has an adverse effect on wildlife habitat, water supplies, traffic, emergency services, and neighboring farmers. Despite their touted economic benefits, you heard about the recent study that suggests that destination resorts actually cost their local community and the state far more than they generate in revenue. This bill would address these problems by making sure destination resorts cater to tourists rather than second homeowners. It would update the siting requirements, as you heard from Director Whitman, to ensure that resorts aren't built in high-risk fire areas or big game habitat. It would also require that resorts mitigate their traffic impacts and ensure that their employees have affordable housing accessible. Let's ensure that destination resorts serve the public purpose for which they were created by passing this bill. Thank you for hearing me.
Thank you. Brock?
Thank you, Chair Dingfelder and members of the committee. My name is Brock Howell, and I'm a land use advocate for Environment Oregon. And we are here in support of House Bill 2227. And I would mostly like to direct my testimony towards comments that have been made. There have been quite a bit of concerns that this has been framed as an anti-economic development, especially towards rural Oregon. We do not feel that that's the proper frame for this or what the intent of the bill is.
The current economic crisis, especially with Oregon's unemployment rate, is definitely a big concern. Leaving the status quo with the destination resorts is not going to solve the problem, and it's not going to help at all. And so this bill we do not see as hurting our chances of rural Oregon getting out of this situation we're in. I don't know.
Just have to push them apart a little bit. They don't like to be near each other.
All right.
They're not bipartisan.
There are significant issues with the current system of economic development, or as far as the impact on rural communities, which is not all rural communities are able to assess or do assess impact fees or are able to get sufficient revenue from destination resorts to cover the impacts to their public services. This will afford an opportunity to find parity towards rural communities. And so we hope that in being able to focus our development in rural communities or rural areas, that we will be able to make better rural communities within existing urban growth boundaries, as well as having the right types of opportunities outside of that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, gentlemen. Any questions? All right. Thank you very much. Martha Peagle, Peter Livingston, and Danielle Wilbur. I can never say your name right. Just apologize, Danielle. Okay, come on up. Danielle, you go first.
Thank you, Senator Dingfelder and members of the committee. My name is Danielle Welliver. I'm the Legislative Affairs Director for 1,000 Friends of Oregon. 1,000 Friends of Oregon is in support of HB 2227 as it is has been amended. This bill returns destination resorts or any newly sited and built destination resorts to more towards tourist-oriented facilities. We believe the bill, as it is now written, would protect land and farmers, ranchers. It'll protect water supplies. It'll protect communities from costs associated with the developments in terms of transportation costs and firefighting. We ask for your support of this bill. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Martha, how are you?
Thank you. For the record, my name is Martha Peagle. I'm an attorney with Schwabe Williamson and Wyatt. I'm here today to speak in opposition to the provision of the bill that deals with irrigation districts, and I'm handing out written testimony that I do hope that you'll have some time to go over, because I'm not going to be able to provide you with a great deal of detail here. But what's important is that I'm offering you this testimony from a perspective as a former director of Water Resources Department for 8 years. I spent nearly 20 years in water law in Oregon and water policy. I work with irrigation districts and developers, and what you have here is not sound water management policy. It is not going to result in effective water use. It is an unnecessary limitation that's going to tie the hands of irrigation districts who have and can continue to work cooperatively with resorts to provide water when the irrigation district landmass is shrinking. It's being swallowed up by the urban growth boundaries and urban reserve areas for the cities of Bend and Redmond. My testimony cites reports that were done by the Deschutes Water Alliance, an intergovernmental coalition of interests, noting that more than 9,000 acres of irrigation district land are slated to be enveloped in urban growth boundaries. That means that when there was water rights on that land, it's got to go someplace. And it also means that customers who have been paying assessments to irrigation districts are no longer going to be there in the future. By forming partnerships with resorts and other water users, irrigation districts have a tool to continue to provide water, and it also means that the destination resorts don't have to go out and develop new water supply, which, contrary to some testimony that you've heard today, is not good for the resource. If you're going to get a new water right, it means it's from groundwater. If you work cooperatively with the district, you use an existing water right. I would also like to leave with you this a map that shows the extensive boundaries. Right. I know my time is up, and I'll leave it with you. And I think you may have received copies of this. the important thing here is to note the extensive land masses.
If you don't sit close enough to the mic, it's not
Yeah, okay. You could just leave it. We can't see it that far anyway,
all
Martha.
Right. It's important to know that irrigation district boundaries include a lot of land that is not irrigated. And this map shows you where the overlay between irrigation districts, resorts, lands that are mapped for resorts, and resorts that have been approved or are developed.
Is that statewide or just in the Deschutes
County? In Deschutes County.
Okay, thank you.
Good afternoon, Chair Dingfelder and members of the committee. I'm Peter Livingston. I'm an attorney at Schwabe Williamson Wyatt, and I come to you with experience as a former chief referee of the Land Use Board of Appeals, 20 years in land use law, and an adjunct professor at Willamette Law School in land use. I've given you some written testimony. I hope you have time to read it. The points that I'm making, basically one point today, but it's quite technical. And it goes to the language in the bill that states the county may not map lands as eligible for destination resort siting or approve siting a destination resort if the lands are, then it lists the exclusions from destination resort mapping. Until now, the destination resort map has been the definitive word on whether an applicant can expect to file a successful application for development. By inserting the language or approve siting a destination resort, what the statute does is move to the very end of the process the determination of eligibility of the property for development. That means could be several years, because if there is an appeal, that can consume years, and when the decision, if it's ultimately remanded back to the county is able to reopen the record to consider changes since the last time they looked at the project. So if after 4 years of appeals someone comes back and says, actually now the population of Bend is over 100,000, at that point the resort becomes ineligible for development. The developer will then be out of pocket the millions of dollars it took to get to that point in the land use process. Now, that the odds are so, that risk is so great that I personally would not advise anybody to file an application for destination resort development if this statute goes in effect the way it is now. It is, and my time is up.
We have your written testimony, Peter, so we'll read through it and appreciate you coming here today.
Thank
we
you.
Have about 10 more minutes and we have to get to the floor, so thank you. Any quick questions for this panel? Okay, we have a couple more folks up, Sean Jillians and Stephen Gaffori. Anybody else that would like to testify that did not sign up?
Still 2 minutes.
Yep.
Yeah, we might make it.
We're not giving them 5 minutes each. Don't worry. We have
10 minutes left, Madam Chair.
We have to walk to the floor and get our bills.
Come on, Sean. What part of the don't we understand, right?
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Sean Jillians, representing the Oregon Association of Realtors, in opposition to House Bill 2227A. I won't reiterate a lot of the points that have already been made, Madam Chair. I think they've been great in outlining the problems with the bill. The basic premise of the bill, in our opinion, gives too much authority to LCDC. It strips out all the statute and provides them the opportunity in rulemaking to address all of this. Rather than studying the issue and making amendments to the statute, I'd point you to one specific provision, which is Section 2, Sub 2D, which allows LCDC to place a cap on destination resorts by region or county. This effectively would allow an appointed body to impose a moratorium on a region, and we find that very troubling language. Madam Chair, the last thing I'll make a point about is this is truly about economic development in rural Oregon, and allowing LCDC to place caps or moratoriums on destination resorts, in our opinion, is not furthering economic development in rural Oregon. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. You get the under 2 minute award.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Stephen Gaffour. I'm here today with the Oregon chapter of the American Planning Association. I can't remember, Madam Chair, when I've had an opportunity to just say that my testimony is essentially wrapped up in the first section of the bill. In the preamble of the bill, it lays out the reasons why the bill is necessary, and my testimony could be just taken from that. You've got it in front of you. I won't read it. This issue of economic development is interesting to me. If we had a bill that mandated that we pave all of Eastern Oregon, that probably would get a lot of jobs, I think. And if we said, no, we're not going to pave all of Eastern Oregon, someone would say, wait a minute, you're stopping economic development. There's a reason why we don't want to have economic development at any cost, and that's because we live in the state of Oregon, and we think this bill will help Oregon keep the state as it should be. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Any questions?
Okay, Madam, for the chair, for the record, we'd like some pavement in eastern Oregon.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much, gentlemen. And with that, we will close the public hearing on House Bill 2227A, close the Senate Environment Natural Resources Committee, and we'll see you all on the floor in just a few minutes.